Shalom la Yehudim, shalom la b'nei Noach, shalom goyim. It's the evening of the sixth day, Kaf Tes b'Menachem Av, Tavshinayin Hei, Parashas Ra'e, the evening of the fifth day, Thursday, 13 August 2015. Webcasting from the everlasting target of Europeans, no matter their stage of evolution. Europeans have sneered and snarled at Jews from the beginning of recorded European history. There are records in ancient Greek, since at least Alexander's day, when he met Simon the Just, Shimon HaTzadik, 4 centuries before Christendom emerged to take the place of the classical age of Greece and Rome, whose writers and philosophers also in Rome had sneered and snarled at the Jews. The festival of Hanukkah reminds us every year of the war of Greek culture against Jewish culture, and the written record in Latin from the Roman period bulges with the record of Roman rule here and the constant state of rebellion by the Jews, which culminated in the greatest massacre in Jewish history prior to the Holocaust, Hadrian's War of 132 to 135. That is when the Great Diaspora began and still continues to this very day. And this was all before the rise of Christianity, which produced another variety of Jew hatred. The Greeks and the Romans sneered at Jews for being atheists. They could not conceive of a god that not one Jew knew what he looked or she looked like. When the Romans penetrated to the Holy of Holies in the temple, expecting some amazing find, statue, treasure, magical device, they found nothing but an empty room. And that left them speechless. The pagan age then gave way to the Christian age, when Jews were no longer mocked for being atheists, but the opposite. They were deicides, God killers. Now the Jews were scorned for having killed God. That charge, that accusation, lasted from day one of the Roman Church, successor to pagan Rome, lasted till just 50 years ago, into my lifetime, when Pope John 23rd guided his church toward leading it from their doctrine. Still, the anti-Jew spirit is alive and well in Europe. And not surprisingly, with the radical plunge in the number of believing Christians on that continent, post-Holocaust, when all the old anti-Semitic and Nazi-style slanders are no longer tolerated, a new way to hate Jews has emerged. And it's called the crucifixion of the Palestinians, by no longer deicidal Jews, but genocidal Jews. In a vast sea of European minds, the Jews are bent on exterminating the ancient Palestinian nation, as the Germans wanted to exterminate the Jews, if not in identical ways. The endless violence here is the result, so say the Europeans, of Jews having stolen Palestine from its legal, authentic ancient people, the Israel that won't let them have even a small piece of it for the independent state they deserve and have been deprived of throughout recorded history. The endless bloodshed here is the result of, quote, the illegal occupation and the blockade of Gaza and the discrimination against Palestinians, close quote. And that is an almost direct quote from a fascinating little news story this morning about how in Oslo, you know, the magical city where Yossi Beilin and a gang of Jew killers shook hands on the Oslo abomination just about this very month, 22 years ago. In Oslo today, there's a film festival which won't show an Israeli documentary on the lives, as I understand it, of 4 seriously limited children and the treatment they get in Israel. The director Roy Zafrani's film was rejected by this festival for, listen to the title of this festival, Festival of Human Rights and Human Wrongs. His film had been warmly received at other festivals in other countries, but not in this one in Oslo, Norway. Organizers sent him a letter saying, quote, we support the academic and cultural boycott of Israel. So unless the films are about the illegal occupation or the blockade of Gaza or the discrimination against Palestinians, we can't show them, close quote. And there you have this generation's substitute for Jews as Christ killers, or Jews as greedy capitalist warmongers, or Jews as spreaders of disease, or Jews as vampires who suck out Gentiles' blood. Today, it is our illegal occupation, the blockade of Gaza, and discrimination against the Palestinians. And these Norwegian festival organizers are not alone in Europe. The top story on J-Post front page this morning was, quote, Israel demands European government stop funding illegal Palestinian building, close quote. Major General Yoav Mordechai, coordinator for government activities in the territories, says, this is the subtitle, there's a war over Area C. Europe says it is only offering humanitarian aid, close quote. First of all, yours truly has a problem right away with the Major General's title, quote, coordinator for government activities in the territories. I checked the original Hebrew, and indeed the word territories, shtachim, is used, not Judea and Samaria, which says much about the state of the state of Israel, that has never claimed the right to keep even a square meter of the land it won in battle in 1967. But let's let that ride for a moment. I want to focus on the manifest content of this news story, the war over Area C between Israel and the EU. The EU that, you know, pumps a constant river of euros into Arab pockets in Judea and Samaria. And it's clearer now than ever that the EU's involvement and the involvement of individual European governments on the side of the Arabs who try to murder Jews almost every day is this generation's mutated form of age-old sneering and snarling at the Jews. Supporting the national aspirations of the victims of Zionism, the legitimate, authentic landlords of the West Bank against the Jews is this generation's European way of hating and aggressing against us. The news item began with the testimony in the Knesset this week about this constant building of permanent structures in Judea and Samaria in Area C, which legally is 100% Israeli ruled. The building is using funds provided by the EU. And so there's this constant clash almost every day as the Arabs build in Area C. And at least one patriotic NGO keeps track of what they're doing. According to this report, since April, there have been 30 meetings between Mordechai's civil administration and international officials over one of these building sites alone. And over the last 20 months, the civil administration has identified 140 such projects and in the process demolished 40 illegal structures funded by the international community, as it's called. In the Watergate scandal, remember, the watchword to Woodward and Bernstein was follow the money. And so in this sense, this is a story about European money used to aggress against Israel, in which the allegedly archaic ones are mere pawns. According to the tragically still in force Oslo documents, Area C was to be unchanged, legally speaking, since 1967, still 100% Israel's business. And here are these Europeans, these blankety-blank expletive deleted Europeans, still aggressing against us. Without the so-called international community, there would be no Palestinian national movement whatsoever. It's a phantom identity as a nation. It is nothing but a smokescreen for Europeans to hide behind in their chronic hostility to the Jewish people. They claim that all the funds for these permanent structures are legal, because even though Area C is Area C, they say, the accords call for Palestinian rights to have legal housing. The efforts of the EU, they say, fit the legal definition of humanitarian assistance. Israel is obligated to protect and facilitate development for the local population, close quote, they say. And I say hogwash. It is said that this generation of Europeans, you know, post the carnage of World War II, recoil from national identities and the strife that it leads to. This is another motive, then, for their anti-Israel animosity, our strong national identity and desire to preserve it. They have also lost all religious belief and hate Jews for still maintaining theirs. American Independence Day, July 4th, 1776, took place 239 years ago. The English Magna Carta of 1215 was signed 800 years ago. Jewish Independence Day happened Erev Pesach in Egypt 3,328 years ago. Europeans are losing their national identity, their national existence. And when they see us Jews still thriving and holding on to ours, they hate and envy us even more.
רחמניה יאכלו אהבתן בערדי מצרים רחמניה רחמניה יאכלו אהבתן בערדי מצרים כל דכין יתה וכל כל יצריך יתה ויפסח יתה ויפסח כל דכין יתה וכל כל יצריך יתה ויפסח השטח לשנה הבאה וערד ישראל השטח די לשנה הבאה ונחורי בכל העולם הייתי פה והייתי גם שם העולם רעב כל כך רעב הנה ימים באים לא רעב ללחם ולא צמא למים העולם צמא לקדושה לאהבה לשמוע אותך אני מזמין את כל העולם מי שרעב יבוא ויוכל יש מקום לכולם אני מזמין הלילה הזה כל מי שליבו מחכה אחד שאתה אתה ומה שהיה היה מכל קצווי תבל לארץ ישראל כל השערים פתוחים הלילה הזה כולם בני חורים מי שרעב יבוא ויוכל יש מקום לכולם אני מזמין הלילה הזה כל מי שליבו מחכה יבוא החכם ואתם הבן שנידח אי שם מכל קצווי תבל לארץ ישראל כל השערים כל דכפין יתה ואכול, כל יצריך יתה ויפסח, יתה ויפסח.
Yes, the Europeans today are returning true to form as the Holocaust recedes into the distant past, which is inevitable. There was a story a couple of weeks ago about the Ohio State University marching band, including in their current repertoire a number, or numbers, mocking the death camps. On the one hand, it's perhaps a sign of the rising tide of anti-Semitism in this period. On the other hand, I attribute the behavior in part just to the passage of time. I doubt all these musicians are major Jew haters. I doubt any of them could answer two or three questions on what the Holocaust really was, including the unspeakable horror of the camps. I think even Mr. Tough Guy, General George S. Patton, the known anti-Jew, when he walked into one of these camps, looked around, smelled it, threw up. He couldn't take it. The scene and the stench. Once in my life, I smelled a decaying corpse, and that was one too many. What the air in those camps must have smelled like is unimaginable. So, like a rubber band snapping back, the war sinks below the waves of experience into distant history, and the Europeans, leastwise a significant part of them, are returning to their old habits. So in addition to news of that film festival in Oslo barring an Israeli film because it showed Israel in a good light, Yediot yesterday carried another story of four retirement-age Israeli couples, tourists, in their 60s and 70s, not talking loudly, not being unruly, who entered a cafe in Stockholm just to order some coffee, who momentarily were approached by the owner and asked to leave because one of his waiters heard them talking and he understood they were speaking Hebrew. The owner then came over and said he was sorry, but at that time only full meals were being served. They couldn't have just coffee and they had to leave. And the Israelis understood what was going on. And then, of course, tomorrow we may have a report on how the day went in Paris today. And it's Tel Aviv Beach Day. In recent years, the municipality has trucked in sand in midsummer to make an artificial beach on the quays lining the Seine, with a different theme each day of the season. Today was to be Tel Aviv Day, and the gendarmes were reported to be on high alert and prepped in their hundreds in the event anti-Jews showed up to cause trouble. The mayor said it was possible to scorn the policies of the government in Israel without punishing the Israeli population like this. Also, within the context of the Israeli-Palestinian crisis, she said, Israel is an open city for all minorities and sexes. Tel Aviv is artistically creative and progressive. And her deputy mayor chimed in with his own explanation for having such a Tel Aviv day at all, when every enlightened journalist in Paris knows Israel to be a racist, fascist, imperialist, criminal occupier. He said that Tel Aviv is different, not at all like the brutal, his word, national government, and a distinction must be made between Tel Aviv and the rest of Israel. I find this way of thinking fascinating. Depth psychologists call it splitting. The mind, unable to compute the complexity of another person, splits them into different people. Today's news was also about the stampede of European businesses traveling to Tehran now. The Swiss seem to be the first off the mark, and today formally ended all restrictions on trade with Iran. The Italians, the French, the Germans are also gearing up. As I may have observed at the time, a month ago exactly when the deal was announced on July 14th, the P5 plus 1... especially the British, the French, and the Germans, looked upon this deal, I think, as payback for all the Holocaust remembrance activities of recent years. Significantly, the handiwork of less than classically religious Jews, precisely because the vast majority of Jews do not live Jewish lives, remembering the Holocaust is the only way to remain connected. I remember Rebbetzin Esther Jungreis, Auschwitz survivor, herself, if not her family, reporting on her attendance about 20 years ago at the opening of the Holocaust Museum in Washington with tears in her eyes, not because she was remembering what happened during the war, but because on the dais, she said, there were all these millionaire Jewish businessmen who had lobbied and contributed to the making of this museum, who had married off, all of them, a son or a daughter, to a non-Jew. Rebbetzin Jungreis understood that this fact was more important and saddening than the museum. The museum would not stop the shrinkage of the Jewish people. And in that major slice of the Jewish community, the Holocaust has taken the place of Jewish identity and made of themselves a bit of a nuisance, I think, to non-Jews. So for decades now, there's been this Holocaust industry, all worthy efforts at commemoration in books, testimonies, video archives. Symbolic of his generation, Steven Spielberg funded a massive video archive, interviews with survivors telling their stories. But of course, Steven, I think, married a non-Jewess, and I doubt his children live Jewish lives. That's why he's symbolic. I think the Iran deal for the big three in Europe was payback time for all this Holocaust stuff in their faces in recent years. For sure, they were signing off on supporting Iran in its drive to building a bomb to drop on the Jewish state. Like Emperor Hadrian, who destroyed Jewish life in Eretz Yisrael for the next 18 centuries, his spiritual offspring, today's Europeans, leastwise some of them would like to do that too. Listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. A link is posted for this webcast, and so everyone should now put me on pause and check it out. Open another browser. It's only a minute and a half. So now, assuming you have seen this minute and a half video, you have seen some of the DNA of the violence here, and really all over the world, wherever Muslims are engaged in violence, which is a lot of places. The GSS today reported that over the last 7 months, Israeli security arms have foiled 111 terror attacks, including kidnapping, and among them 17 suicide attempts, suicide bombers. And that scorecard, though, is a drop in the bucket of blood spilled by Muslims in this period. Muslims like this young actor in this video clip, speaking Hebrew, of course, an Israeli Arab. I've lost track of the almost daily reports of suicide bombings in a score of countries. that take the lives of 20, 30, 130 people at a pop. This is going on in Syria and Iran and in Iraq and Yemen and Egypt and Libya. Hundreds of thousands of people have been killed in the most horrible way in just the last 4 years alone. And here's this young Israeli-Arab actor who I gather had a part in this new movie about the Sabina hijacking in 1973 in which Ehud Barak and Bibi Netanyahu were heroic commandos. He claims, and I believe him, he does not support what the high skyjackers did, but he does object to the movie and everybody else calling them terrorists. No, he insists, they are fighters, because their country was stolen. He says their way is not his way, but at least don't call them terrorists, they are fighters. Well, there are two things here. One is the ridiculous amnesia about history, distortion of it, but more importantly, the ethics in this young man's mind. I think you're looking here at the crossroads between civilization and barbarism. For the Arabs, when your cause is just, anything goes. All means are legitimate. In his eyes, the skyjackers, he may even portray one of them for all I know, are not terrorists but fighters. These Arabs have a very rudimentary, if at all, conscience. Their culture knows nothing of the evolution of ethics in the West. For example, for centuries, gentlemen in the West would fight duels of honor and die in them sometimes, like Alexander Hamilton. And in these contests, there were rules of procedure. First, you know, pistols or swords, and if pistols, the gentlemen would stand back to back, pace off an agreed upon beforehand number of steps, say six, then turn and fire. An Arab, by contrast, in his ethical universe, would, like Obama, smile, agree to the procedure, stand back to back, pace off only three steps, turn and shoot his rival in the back. Muhammad instituted the ethic of lying to get your way. The famous truce of Hudaybiyah comes to mind between Muhammad and his rivals in his own tribe. It was to last for 10 years, but after only two, Muhammad saw an opening, took it, and emerged victorious. This was the model for Arafat, and he said so in his speech at Johannesburg in 1994 after the handshake on the lawn the previous fall. And in the mind of this young Arab actor, the word fighter includes surprising civilians trapped inside an airplane, and old men, old women, children, who have no way of defending themselves. Fighting for a barbarian includes planting bombs under the tomatoes in the supermarket on Friday as Jewish homemakers shop for the Sabbath and get blown to pieces. This barbarian hasn't got a clue as to the discomfort civilized people feel about his people's style of so-called fighting, which is not fighting, but the mutual ambush murder of the defenseless on the other side until both sides just get tired and stop. This is one major reason why the Arab-Israeli conflict never ends, because it is a clash on many levels, one of them religious, Islam's war against Jews, and other stubborn infidels who refuse to admit to the truth that Islam is the greatest religion. And another level is this clash between civilization and barbarism. The excellent Andrew McCarthy on the National Review site this week had two pieces, one yesterday and one the day before, or 2 days before, an expose on the central demand of the Iranians in all of these years of negotiations over their nuclear program, and that was the demand that the P5 plus one recognize the right of Iran to have a nuclear program at all. If you remember, the negotiations began with no program whatsoever. They experienced the prohibition, which triggered the sanctions, to be a wound to their pride. They don't like being judged a rogue member state in the axis of evil. And I was struck on the McCarthy pieces by the similarity between their demand and that of the PLO, Arafat, to be recognized as a legitimate movement for national liberation entitled to wage war with all means available. At his famous UN speech in 1974, which is in my book, Arafat defined terrorism as the violence of people with a bad cause, so that in the Arab-Israeli conflict, the Israelis were the terrorists. Their cause was unjust. The PLO was not terrorist, because their cause is just. And so Iran was approached already in 2011 during Obama's first term by Senator John Kerry, then still a senator, not a member of the administration, speaking unofficially for Obama, on the mutual desire of the two of them to remove that insulting prohibition leveled against Iran on having a nuclear program, because Iran was a terrorist state. Kerry and Obama made clear to the Iranians that they supported Iran's demand that they be recognized as having the right to have a nuclear program. In other words, Kerry, as in the days he supported the Viet Cong, which in his eyes had a legitimate cause, so he and Obama have become advocates of the way Iran sees things. These two have crossed the line between civilization and barbarism, and if their deal goes through, only Hashem can save the world.
יכבוש את כל העולם בלי ירייה אחת, בלי ירייה אחת. משיח יכבוש את כל העולם בלי ירייה אחת, בלי ירייה אחת. כי עיקר כלי זינו של משיח הוא התפילה. כי עיקר זינו של משיח התפילה. משיח יכבוש את כל העולם בלי ירייה אחת, בלי ירייה אחת. כי עיקר כלי זינו של משיח התפילה. כי עיקר כלי זינו של משיח התפילה. על כן מי שרוצה לזכות לקדושת ישראל באמת, צריך להרבות בתפילות ובקשות ושיחות בינו לבין קונו. כי זה עיקר הכליזיים לנצח המלחמה, כי זה עיקר הכליזיים לנצח המלחמה. יריעה אחת, בלי יריעה אחת.
Last item, when I praised Senator Chuck Schumer for his decision to oppose Obama's plan, I imagined he would then work feverishly to bring other Democrat senators around. But yesterday, Seth Lipsky of the New York Sun, formerly with the Wall Street Journal, said that Chuck Schumer has, on the contrary, disappeared. He's not doing that. I guess he is a divided self, like Alan Dershowitz, who is also, like Schumer and IBJ, they blow hot and cold. On one day they do the right thing, and on the next the wrong thing. Oh well, that's it for this evening and this week. I'll be back, God willing, after the Holy Sabbath. Until then, Shabbat Shalom, V'layla Tov, Meretz Yisrael.